Follow me down this deep, dark hole.
And welcome to New Horror Express, your fortnightly podcast, chatting to the best indie talent the horror genre has to offer. In this episode, I chat to Pie Wacket director Adam McDonald. A couple of provisos before we get into the show. First of all, this is a slightly shortened interview to what it might have been because Adam was needed back on the set of season 3 of Slasher, which is he was filming for Netflix. But that doesn't stop us talking. It's still an interesting interview. There's still plenty there. It's not that shortened. It's still a very good chat. Secondly, the other proviso I need to flag up before we get into the episode is we talk extensively about his latest movie, Pie Wacket. If you've not seen Pie Wacket and you don't want to have any spoilers about that movie and are still planning to watch it, then don't listen to this episode right now. Go and watch the movie, then come back and listen to this episode, because there is a bunch of spoilers from the way we talk about the movie. So yeah, that's really the two provisos I need to give you right off the top of the show. We talk a lot about that movie, obviously. I've just discussed that, and we talk about a lot of other things, his directorial influences. We talk about how, as an actor himself, how he can relate to actors, how he feels that gives him a better relationship as the director-actor relationship. We also talk, we also kind of go off on a wander about the original Predator movie. There's a lot of things in here. I won't discuss them all in the intro. I will let you find out what goodies are in the interview for yourself. So without further ado, here's Adam.
Hi, Adam. Welcome to New Horror Express. Good to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me, man. Really appreciate it.
The first thing I think we should talk about is your new film, Pie Wacket. And it was shown here in Scotland at Glasgow Fright Fest, and the response seemed to be generally good. Did you come over to Glasgow Fright Fest?
No, I really wanted to. My last name's MacDonald, which is obviously Scottish origin, and I've never been to Scotland, so I've always wanted to go, and I thought that might be a good chance, that they might bring me over or something like that, but I just couldn't. I was working on something anyway. It wouldn't have worked out, so, but I was, you know, I sent a video message, and the composer of the film is from the UK, so he was around. I don't think he went to Glasgow, but they had a screening in London, and he was there, so. There was some lineage to the UK, which was cool. But I heard it went well, and they did a great introduction to it, and it was well received. The reviews were great. They seemed to dig it. So yeah, it was cool. It was cool, man. Because I know the festival. I knew the festival for years. Obviously, to be part of it in any facet was just so awesome.
It's a very interesting film. It's not your typical horror film. It doesn't go for the kind of obvious jump scares. It's very character based, and obviously, as a writer and director, I take it this was a very deliberate choice.
Oh, it was, yeah. Because the reason I did that, I did a film before Pie Wacket called Backcountry.
Yeah.
But in your world, I think it's called Blackfoot Trail. Because apparently in the UK, you guys never used the term backcountry. No. So it's like, what the hell is that? But so the idea was, for me, was to make the subject, take the subject matter seriously, whether it was the bear attack or Black Magic or Piwakit, like, you know, to see what the film would look like if the ritual felt really extremely real, rooted in reality. Mm-hmm. So there's more silence that way. You're going through the, you know, whole journey with Leah just to see, you know, as if you're there with her, almost like a voyeur. And a big influence on me, huge influence on me is, he's nearly my age, which is weird, but Derek Sanfrance, his movies, Blue Valentine, A Place Beyond the Pines, huge. So almost like how I sell my movies sometimes, to think like, what if, like, you know, Blue Valentine with witchcraft. So it has that really kind of, you're almost tangible, you're almost there, with, you know, with some flourishes of shots and stuff like that to make it just a little bit more interesting. But what was it like alone for this girl to go through that? So being realistic, not putting a bunch of sound design, too many jump scares, or, you know, the fighting the witch to the end, they burn her alive and they save the day. I just wanted to make something really dark, you know. Yeah. And for that to work is like, you know, where it's quiet, you're immersed in it with her.
Yeah.
So any little thing, a door opening is enough just to rattle you. And you don't know, like, I love the feeling of knowing something's in the water with you, but you don't know what. That's the best. So that backcountry was like that, Piwak is like that. So that's why I did that.
Yeah. And there's a lot of good kind of scares in the movie, in the things that you don't see, and like the scene with our best friend, where we as the main teenager's best friend, where you don't see what happens to her, you just see the next day she's in the car and something has gone badly wrong during the night, and I felt that was very effective.
Oh, cool! I appreciate that. Well, I got that idea from The Ring, the remake. Have you seen the remake of The Ring?
Yeah, I've seen the remake. Yeah.
Well, you know, like, the friend in that movie, the girl with the black hair that you see at the beginning, her mm-hmm. friend, when she ends up in a mental institution, and the lead character, Naomi Watts, you know, she goes over and talks to her.
Yeah.
And she's in the mental institution. So you put the two together, you see that she was in the room during the time when Samara came out of the TV and attacked her friend. Where was she? She left, she went upstairs, she was there, so she kind of witnessed it, but she was a part of it.
Yeah.
So the very idea, the thought of, like, oh my God, she was in the room. You never see, you put your mind there. Like, what happened? What did she see? Why was she seeing? What was her perspective? You don't know. It's always so much scarier when someone tells you the story, almost, you know, or like where they've come from.
Yeah.
So I wanted to make, you know, I know what she sees at night, but it may be different for everybody else, but I want to, you know, that she witnesses something and she's so terrified she leaves the house and it's just like bad energy. So most people in the audience, you know, 5%, you know, 10% will be like, oh, what the fuck is that? You know, I need something. But I believe the majority will place, if they're already in the right zone, will place something in their head. Like, I don't want to fucking know what she saw. I don't want to fucking know. And that just builds to what's going to happen later. I just love that stuff. I love that stuff because you can fill in the blanks, you know.
Yeah.
And like Leah going through the story, you can feel for Janice too. Like, what the fuck did she see? It terrified her, and then it just fuels the paranoia, fuels the fear.
I think the thing that kind of makes it work as well is that the characters are all pretty believable. Like, Leah is a believable teenager. She's not just like a kind of Hollywood teenager. Like, it's not like The Craft or something, you know. It's rooted in a kind of reality. And the relationship that she has with her mother seems like fairly real as well. And it's very well acted by those two actresses, Nicole Munoz and Laurie Holden.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I saw Laurie Holden in The Walking Dead, and she did that scene with her sister when she died at the beginning of the first season. Yeah. And I thought it was so potent and real. And I she was my first choice for the role. So I pitched it to her. I just knew that she could go to those places, you know, even though sometimes she doesn't have the choice or the ability, like someone is not allowing her to go there. But I thought I would, and like just open her up and like let her totally express herself as an actor as much as she can and go as far as we can. And Nicole as well, like, that was an open audition, and we saw all these girls, and I saw her tape, and I was done. I was like, knew right away, because I felt her pain. I felt her struggle. I felt there was an ocean of something underneath her, of emotion that she had access to. And I could see that in the audition, because sometimes these Hollywood thing you're talking about, sometimes it's not their fault, man. Like, you get these auditions and they're trying and you're like, it's just, no matter what they do, it's not going to be that good. It's going to be okay. It's going to be passable. But then someone comes in and you can see they're wounded, but they have a history and they bring that in their performance and you go, whoa, like I'm really watching you now. And I'm immersed. I'm in. And her look suited it as well. It just, everything just worked and it clicked. And when she came on set, she's raw, man. She's raw. And then Lori just met her right there in the middle, and it just had incredible scenes. I love, because I've been an actor for like 20 years, right? So like watching them work was beautiful. I didn't want to stifle them in any way. Let them feel free, you know, and play. And they were phenomenal. And if Backcountry was the same thing with Missy Peregrim and Jeff Roop, to be able to feel like you can be creative and, you know, not feel stunted or stilted or pushed back or put in a box at all. So you can play those with those emotions. And they did. And they went there. Like, some of the scenes, we did so many takes and some scenes, and they went there every time, and it was exhausting. You know, I'm working on this TV show now for Netflix, and I'm pushing the actors that way too. And they seem to appreciate it, because I've been there, that they walk away like, oh, like it's like I'm giving a good, like more than just it being, oh, it's good enough. We always go a step further. And I encourage that.
You mentioned you've been an actor for a long time yourself. You've got extensive credits on IMDb going back to 98. And so does that make it easier to direct actors, yourself, having done that yourself?
Oh, yeah. Big time. Because I know what it's like to be in front of the camera. I know what it's like to be vulnerable and know my lines and searching for my lines, and what it's like to be, you know, on display like that. It's a very, very, very vulnerable position. I know what it's like to like try to get emotional. I know what it's like to have a sex scene, you know, all that stuff. It's awkward. And so I know what they're going through. So I always, you know, when I was acting or started directing, I wanted to direct them the way I wanted to be directed, which is, you know, with compassion and listening and encouraging their performance and being a supporter, you know. And it just makes the world of difference when you do that. So of course it's so informative, because I was an actor. I've worked with directors where you just feel like they're not giving you anything, like nothing. And when you're doing something there, or they don't know what they want, and it's confusing, and they just don't work well, they don't like communicate. It's a language, right? So oh 100%, it helps so much. And there's something really great when the actors know that you've been an actor too, because they immediately feel more comfortable, because they feel like, oh, I can, you know what it's like, I can go to you and we can work this out. You know, it's like boxing, you know, training with a boxing coach that never fought is much different than working with a boxing coach who has. Same thing. I've trained and did some amateur competition, and I've had a coach that never fought and had a coach that fought. Huge difference. Huge. Same thing. In my world, in my eyes.
Yeah, I can certainly imagine that. And so I suppose you can get, just like you can get great boxing coaches who've not boxed, you can get great directors who've not acted. But, you know, I can see how it definitely be, the communication could be clearer, and, you know, could just having that experience and knowing where you're coming from as an actor.
Exactly.
Was... being an actor for a long time, was being a director always in the back of your mind, or was that just something you fell into with these? I know you've done a couple of shorts, and this is your second feature.
Yeah. No, I definitely wanted to do it. I did my first short in 2004, and I wanted to do it. I wanted to get in genre filmmaking since then. Or even before, as an actor, I wanted to get into genre films as an actor. I grew up loving Evil Dead and Aliens and Predator, and I wanted to do that, you know. And some, you know, I loved dramas as well, and I loved acting. I still do. But as part of me has always wanted to make genre films or be part of them. And I auditioned for George Romero a couple of times and never got in his movies, because he lived in Toronto. He did like Land of the Dead out of Toronto and stuff like that, and Diary of the Dead, and I didn't get in. So I made Somber Zombie. As a way to like, I'm going to make my own. Then I started, then I fell in love with it too. It fit better. Like acting could feel dreadful at times when the character's hard to play or there's so many lines, and I didn't like that feeling, but directing I love. And I just took it to a fish to water, and it suited my personality quite a bit. So Bruce McDonald, a well-known director in Canada, gave me advice to, like, if you want to direct a feature, you have to write it yourself. So I wrote a feature and no one wanted it, but I didn't give up and wrote Backcountry and people wanted it. That changed things. So it took a long time. It took like 10 years.
So you think, do you think that directing is really the direction you're going to keep going in? Do you think you give up acting or just...
No. It's just, you know, give up acting. It's hard because you audition. It's just, you know, unless you're getting offers all the time, you know, acting is a struggle, man. You're out there, you're auditioning, you're working, you're hustling. It's like that with everything though. So it's a guess where you're at. But I just fell in love with directing a little bit more, and I'm spending more time doing it and writing my own stuff, developing my own TV shows, developing my own movies, getting hired on stuff. And it seems to be coming to me, directing and writing seems to be coming to me a lot more fruitfully right now. And it's where I want to be. So I'm just taking in more, you know, of that. And it's funny because Backcountry gave me more kind of notoriety than anything I did in acting ever. And it was one film. And I remember, like, when Hollywood came calling a little bit, it was like, I was like, where were you guys for 15 years acting? Like nothing. It's like Canadian stuff, right?
Yeah.
And they're just like, it takes one. It made enough noise that, you know, LA came, you know, Hollywood came calling. So it was interesting. Very interesting. Yeah. And I was like, yes, fuck, let's make it happen. So it's been an interesting and very tumultuous and crazy experience so far since then. So we'll see what's next, you know.
Going back to Pyewacket for a minute, we talked a little bit about the kind of the slow burn and the kind of rooting it in character and realism. It seemed like the actual initial ritual felt like quite a realistic scene as well. Did you do much reading about the occult, or was that just something you kind of came up with?
No, I did extensive reading on the occult. I read a number of books. One was about the left-hand path. That was really good. And I went to a lot of occult shops and I wanted to get it right, you know, and I felt good because a lot of people who know that world said it was like, it felt genuine. It felt right. It felt like that's how it's done. Even though the spell is an amalgamation of a couple of spells, but they were like, oh, that's how it is. Like, that's pretty damn close. Especially, like, you know, the fact she draws a triangle and the earth is opening up the doorway to the demon, and or like there's a little nugget like that, or that, you know, evil is like a waiting on the other side, like a river, and instead of a river just waiting for you, like, to come over and welcome it to the other side, to your side. And then once it fulfills the task you ask of it, it comes onto you like tenfold. I mean, that's a classic, like, mythology and all that stuff, and rules with the occult as well, that's in the movie. So everything that Rowan Dove says, is a lot of it comes from my research, of course. Mm-hmm. And some people challenge it, but then they look it up and they go, oh, actually that's kind of makes sense. Like, for instance, her ritual is that she does is taken from two rituals. Drawing down the moon is one of them, and a love rituals the other.
Yeah,
so put them together. So the milk and all that is from a love ritual, and the blood and all this stuff, and drawing down the moon is the other thing, and the red string. And so it all, you know, I put it together, and her chant comes from a little inspired by those as well. Mm-hmm. So we made up our own, but derived from very closely from two others, 2.5 others, another one as well. Just puts in the herbs and the cod and the oil, like all this is in her box, you know, upstairs. Mm-hmm. And all that stuff. So yeah, I spent about a year researching, and I read books like an occult primer, it was called, and they give me exactly what, or then the folklore and the demonic things and the demons and the witches and Pyewacket and the history and, you know, and witchcraft, Wiccan, what is that, what's the difference, black magic, white magic, and what it means, and all that stuff. And so, yeah, but I got totally inspired when I heard the name Pyewacket, because I'm a fan of the movie The Guardian. You might know it. It's William Friedkin's Guardian. It came out in the 1990, and I forgot. And I remember I saw it in the theater, and I had the VHS and everything, but I hadn't seen it in like 20 years. And then I saw it was like, oh my God, So I bought it. I saw it. I bought it. I said, oh my God, The Guardian. I haven't seen it forever. I put it on. I forgot that the nanny says the word Piwacket in it. She's giving the baby the stuffed animals and names the familiar spirits from Matthew Hopkins, right? The witch finder general.
Yeah.
He was investigating this coven of witches. The witches were naming these imps and these familiar spirits they were dealing with. One was Vinegar Tom and Holt and Jamara, and one was Piwacket. And the way she says it in the movie, if you see it, she gives the stuffed animals and she's like, this is Jamara, this is Holt, and this is the owl, is Piwacket. And the way she said, I'm like, fuck me, that's what a name. And it just stemmed from there. That's what started my research, the story. And I used some of the story from my own life as well to make it more, you know, tangible. And yeah, it all came together pretty quick. I knew the hook because I was writing it, and I was thinking about it because I did the outline first. I always do an outline first and then fill in the holes and see what, you know, where the characters are at, what are they saying, where are we going, how do I use myself in it? Because I find that people that write from the heart, whether it be music or poetry or books or literature or movies, if it comes from your heart, people feel it.
But yeah,
it means so much more. So I was putting all those together, and I was stopped for about a week because I knew that there was like a young girl like me, or like when I was young boy, my mother moved up north, and you know, away from my friends, and anyone moved my friends. So I used all that, but I wasn't into the occult. But I was like, oh, would it be great if she does a ritual to kill her mother? She doesn't go then, she regrets it. Then the movie's about her trying to figure out what the hell she did, and it's like really slow burn, and it's coming on every day. It's worse and worse and worse till it explodes. But then I didn't have the ending. And I was just, I saw everything. I saw her friends. They listened to him. They listened to ministry. They listened to Crack Gun Grand. They go black metal. I was seeing everything, the name, the girls, her name, and the mom, and where they live. And but then I had this like dream almost. I woke up in a, like half asleep, and I thought, well, when she goes to undo the ritual, her mother's lying there dead. and while someone who really is her mother at the time, but she thinks it's not her mother, is calling from the house.
Yeah.
So I thought, that's it. That's the hook at the end. That she's, while she's looking at her mother's body, she's hearing her mother scream for her. That's the thing. It's convoluted. It's eerie. It gets under your skin. Like, what the fuck? She unleashed this darkness that is so unmanageable, man. That's like, you know, so that's how it all came together.
Wow. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, you get stuck. You're writing, you get stuck. And you're like, oh, wait a minute. And then you see it. And you're like, fuck. There it is.
Just light goes off.
And then she kills her mother for real, thinking it's the demon. You're like, oh my God, we're done. We're good. And then it writes itself. That's the beautiful part. The character starts speaking. And then you start fishing for another one, another idea.
Yeah. At the start of this episode, I'll give a spoiler alert just in case anybody's not listening.
Sure. Yeah. You should.
How did you get the casting the woman who plays Piwacket, or plays Piwacket, you know, kind of comes up in the edge of frames? That is very creepily effective, the dancer that you have.
The contortionist, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, we got her, Bianca, from, we cast her, and she was about the same height and look as Leah, and that's what I wanted. I didn't want her to be like the classic, like super tall and lanky and all, you know, that's been seen. We saw that to death. So I wanted her to have almost the body and feel as Leah. Mm-hmm. And then there's no CG or nothing. I mean, she really comes out of the back and twists and does weird shit. And like, she was incredible, bobbing and weird. Like that's all her. There's no wires or nothing. She just goes crazy because she bends herself like, her back legs are going one way and her front's going the other way. And she sprawls out like that. And when I first saw it, I was like, it's like a spider. It was so strange. Her body was twisted in two ways. And because I told her that, we had a meeting and she was cast, you know, and I said, I want her to come out of the barn, like behind the house, kind of slink out in like a weird, unnatural way, a very unnatural, and then start crawling to her. And she's like, oh, what about this? And she put her on Skype. And she put her computer down and she backed up and then came out of the room, like in the back, and kind of did it. She came out like up, like contorted and then unraveled. And I was like, what the fuck? Just falling towards me like, what the fuck? Yes, do that. Oh God. Because it doesn't look natural. Like why is your legs this way and your body this way? How the fuck did you do that? So yeah, she could do some really crazy stuff. It worked.
Wow. Yeah, that was definitely, it was definitely effective in the movie. Yeah, I was interested as well. Like you were talking about some of your, you were wanting to get into genre filmmaking, and some of your kind of early influences were things like Evil Dead and Alien and Romero stuff, and your films are quite different. They're obviously more slow build, more of a slow burn. What made you go in that direction rather than the kind of things that initially inspired you?
Well, the things that inspired me, like, but the thing is, when you watch Evil Dead, watch it carefully, right? So it's a slow build. It's very slow.
Yeah, the first one is, absolutely. Yeah,
that's the only one I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And it builds so creepily and slowly. And then when it goes a million miles an hour, it goes a million miles an hour. So I find that really inspiring. I like... Mm-hmm. And that's more gruesome, and when it, you know, I love that movie. I think it's a masterpiece. Mm-hmm. Then you look at films like Predator and Alien. Compared to these films today, they're slower. Like Aliens. Yes, the like it's the more the military, it's war and all that stuff. And but you know, you see the alien an hour in the movie. So now a full hour, and then you see the xenomorph a full hour. So they're building, and people forget that. Now it's just the explosions happen. They have to happen right away. As soon as he starts, like a big explosion, and another plane just nonstop, like an action piece. They talk a bit, action piece. They talk a bit. Watch Alien. It's not like that. That beeping, you know, that little beeping on their thing. They're looking at the sensor, looking at the GPS thing or whatever. That built tension like crazy. So, in terms of the filmmaking style and all that stuff, it is a little similar, I think, but not in the story, not the sci-fi horror. Or there's definitely a lot more action, but they're dealing with a much bigger budget. But it's funny, even though I was influenced, like Devil's Rejects is one of my favorite horror movies, which is very different than anything I do, but I appreciate it. But how I interpret my art or whatever, I don't know if you could say it's art, but my work, I guess, or my films is my, it's funny, like my biggest influence is not even in horror, it's Derek Sanfrance. I watch his movies and it blows me away, and I really watch his minutiae or how he shoots or how he, you know, I love that texture. And I think it's kind of cool if that kind of feeling is in a horror movie. And then I think it's, you know, it gives me something a little bit more just different. So yeah. So even like my biggest influence that way is not even from horror at all. So, you know, you can even see in Hereditary, you see Hereditary, you can see he's, you know, he's influenced by who knows, right? Like he could be influenced by Mike Lee or something, I don't know. Like any, so many different things.
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. You know, just because you're a genre filmmaker doesn't mean you have to be necessarily influenced by people in the same genre. I mean, I've interviewed people recently. Somebody I was interviewing earlier was saying their biggest influence was Hal Ashby. You know, he was
or music, it's true. It's so true. Like the movies that affected me, my life more than anything. Where Evil Dead was one, Aliens was another, and The Shining was massive on me.
Yeah,
those movies changed my life, you know, completely. And Friday the 13th Part 3 of all of them, you know. Like I love the first Strangers. I love a good slow. I love House of the Devil. I love Ty West's films for that reason too. Yeah. I like that stuff. I like the thriller aspect of it, or the what's going to happen feeling. Like Shining is genius because you know something bad is going to happen, but you don't know what and exactly when, but you know it's coming. Jaws, it's genius. And a lot of people are too scared. Like they want to show the shark all the time to just cover their ass. It feels like,
absolutely. But, you know, absolutely.
You know, David Fincher, I love his movies too. And I love handheld stuff, and he never uses handheld. He's used handheld like two shots in his whole career. So
it's true.
It
does seem to be that kind of going back to that style that you were talking about, that was more common in decades gone by, does seem to be getting more traction and more popular again. I mean, with horror movies like your movie Pie Wacket, like things like Hereditary, like things like The Witch, like there does seem to be an audience that are definitely there for these kind of movies. They're all very different movies, but that have a more character base and a slower burn rather than just the kind of throwing gore at you from, you know, minute dot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Like, that's why I think, you know, the Japanese horror, like the J-horror that came out, I love those movies too, because like The Ring, I love when you're feeling icky and weird and, you know, you're not grossed out. You just feel strange and unsettled. I love that feeling. And I wanted to evoke that in my films, and I'm inspired by them. But another, like The Ring is a huge influence too on me, or the Japanese horror films for sure. And, but again, going back, harping back to your question before, like another massive influence on me that I forgot to mention was the Korean thrillers. Like if you look at the any kind of action piece, like, or like the Bear Attack I did, or like watch The Chaser or Yellow Sea, like Hun Jin Na's movies are some of my favorites ever. Like The Chaser is my favorite movie of all time, yeah. All time. So you see, like, you know, I watch how he shoots, watch how he does things. Mm-hmm. You know, it inspires me. I mean, that movie blew me away again. Just like that was more recent. That was like 10 years ago, and I saw it, and my jaw dropped. So I realized, you know, I want to make films like that. It's so immersive emotionally. He does this great thing of balancing, which you're seeing more and more in horror. Like, you can strip out all the gore and all the horror elements, and you got a good drama, a really good drama, a great story with amazing A-plus act. That's the key. That's what's changing. I think more and more and more, you're going to see it more and more and more. Like, really good, like Quiet Place, it's a good example. Like A-plus actors, A-plus acting, even in more independent films. Like that new Canadian one that came out, What Keeps You Alive. Look at the acting in there. Next level. Because all these other cheesy movies, a lot of they're cheesy because the acting's bad. Mm-hmm. The story is really good. You're like, oh, the acting's just, nothing is worse sometimes than really bad acting. What's going to take you out more? A bad sound cue or acting? If it's bad acting, you're done.
Yeah.
I think the biggest success of a movie is in its casting, first and foremost.
I think that's very true. I mean, like, you can't, you know, if the acting's bad, you can't invest in the characters. And that's why there's a lot of horrors, particularly slashers, that, you know, you end up kind of rooting for the killer because, you know.
Yeah, he's like, just shut these people up.
Yeah.
Like Eyes Wide Shut, one of my favorite movies too. That I just did a shot today. Like, you know, I was shooting it, and subconsciously, someone's like, "Oh, this feels like Eyes Wide Shut." It was an eerie moment, and I went, "Oh, yeah, I guess so," but not consciously.
Yeah.
You know, like watch Predator, man. Like Predator, like if you haven't seen that in a while, you watch it and you go, "Fuck, this is a really like spooky movie because it unravels slowly." Once they do that whole, they attack the gorilla compound. Then they first introduce the predator. There's a huge gap in between that when they encounter it again of like tension, man. Tension. Where is it? What is it doing? What is it? And the music and his looks and the, you know, Mac and his sweat coming off his brow and shit. Like you're full of tension. You're full of tension.
It is a very tense film, and yeah, I think you like people misremember it. I, funnily enough, just completely coincidentally, I rewatched that just last month.
Oh, good, you know,
yeah.
At times it's fucking like eerie, like intense, you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely, I absolutely agree. It's and people just remember it as kind of all action, and they just remember that scene where they're shooting up the forest and that kind of, and the finale, you know, where the everything blowing up and
exactly. But you look at Mac's death, Dylan's death, all their deaths are Blaine, like they're almost ceremonial.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Like you look at the other movies, they're like action. They're like, just blow it up, or like make it crazy, and like it's so fast and crazy. There's no like, there's no beauty to it. There's no like when Dylan loses his arm, and then he does that 360 with the Steadicam, and then you reveal his arm missing. That is beautiful, horrific. but it's a beautiful shot. It's a great way to tell the story. Instead of just blowing something up, you're like, well, that was a cool sequence, and they blew it up, and that's great. Like, I think of movies maybe like Resident Evil, those movies, you know, like it was more of an action movie than a horror movie for sure, for that reason. Yeah. But you look at Predator, the way like Max's head and his legs bobble just a bit after he gets his head blown off or part of his head, and it just stays there a little, like, it's fucking like crazy, you know, like Dylan's death, raising his gun and firing in slow-mo, and this, it's so choreographed and so like, it's almost like a dessert or something. Like, it's beautiful. It's orchestrated. Instead of just going, throw everything on the field. It's like, oh, that's a beautiful play. What a beautiful play.
Yeah.
That's how I see it.
Yeah. And again, there's that believability thing of, even though it's a kind of crazy, out of this world story and, you know, out with reality, there is a believability in kind of them as a team. Of, you know, a kind of band of brothers kind of element to it that makes you, draws you further into that story, however crazy and it is.
Yeah, exactly. You can root for them. You can attach yourself to them. So you feel for them. That's what people forget, you know. You feel for them. You feel it. So you feel it. So you get involved in the story and you really feel it. That helps the horror. That's why, like, you know Leah, you know, by the end, or hopefully you do, and you feel like you then hope, most I hope would feel for her, because you know the mom when she burns to death. Mm. Or Backcountry before they get attacked by that bear, you know them. Not just two people getting attacked by a bear watching something on YouTube. But now you know the people in the car accident. Makes the accident so much worse, so much more emotional.
Yeah.
You drive by and someone says, this is a car accident. You watch it looks horrific. You drive by. Yeah, it's horrific. It's memorable. It's stained on your brain, but not in an emotional way. Almost like in a visual way. And then someone says, oh, that's your mother was in that car. Totally different. Totally different.
Yeah.
Then it takes a completely different kind of feeling. That accident will, you know, and then so that's what I try to do with those movies I've done. Yeah. The emotional basis, you know.
You mentioned... a couple of times that you're working on a new thing for Netflix. Can you tell us anything about that?
Yeah. Well, I'm doing there's a show called Slasher that's on Netflix, and they approached me. They liked Backcountry a lot, and they approached me to look at maybe doing season 2, and I couldn't because I was shooting Piwacket. Mm-hmm. And then they came to me for season 3. So I went for the meeting, and I talked to them. They hired me, and it's been going great. We're almost done. It's a 56-day shoot or something crazy, and then we're almost done, and we're working hard. And I saw one of the episodes, and I'm very happy. It's very different than films because it's not – for me, it's like I don't put any ownership on it because, you know, it's not like my film, obviously. It's like I'm working to make the best show possible for the people, like, that I'm working for and with, you know. But it's turning out really well. I'm pumped. I'm ecstatic, yeah.
Excellent.
Good. It's good. It's different. Okay. Different.
Do you have any other upcoming projects in the pipeline?
Yeah, well, I have a few that are kind of brewing in development that we'll see what happens. You know, I do have a TV show that's in early, got optioned and early. We'll see if we get an early development. That's all I can say about that one. But that's what I wrote. That's my baby.
Yeah.
So we should know more news about that before the end of the year and see if it's going to find a home and start, you know, get started on that. But I also have this other film I believe in that I'm, you know, attached to direct called Nocturne. That's supposed to go soon too, so I'm really pumped with that. And
can you tell us anything about that? Or
I can't really, but at least a little bit. Is it deals with grief again, but this time it deals with a father and son. And I like that angle because I've dealt with, you know, from the female's perspective in Piwacket, and like it's similar in some ways. What's the male perspective? But it's another like. That was a little bit more with a fantasy element to it. It's a little eerie. It's almost like a Donnie Darko meets, you know, Neverending Story meets something really dark, like black metal. So it's like, that's why it'd be something onto its own, but feel familiar at times. Like it's got the ethereal quality to it, something tangible, but a real darkness to it too. Really creepy, really creepy. It could be. And then, you know, that's where I'm going to take it, and emotional, but we'll see. We'll see one step at a time. I just got to finish this Netflix show and do some rewriting on stuff, and then hopefully my series, I'm hoping it gets picked up, because that's something I wrote and I'm dying to get off the ground. So
okay. And you were saying you can't really say much more about that, your show.
No, I can't. Okay. I wish I could. I want to.
Yeah.
Once it goes, you'll be the first to know. I promise.
Okay.
And but it is in the genre, and it deals with high school. But it's good. It's different. Okay.
Well, I know you're very busy, and you need to get back to doing the show that we've just been discussing. So I will let you do that. It's been very nice to have you on the show, Adam. And hopefully we can have you back on and talk about the show you can't currently talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to. It is called Night Terrors, so I can tell you that.
All right. Excellent. Okay. Well, hopefully see you again then.
Okay. Cheers.
That was my guest, Adam McDonald there, who I'd like to thank once again for appearing on the show. And I look forward to checking out season 3 of Slasher when it comes to Netflix. I'm sure all of you listening at home will be checking that out as well. As always, I like to give a big thank to you, listener, for tuning into this latest episode of New Horror Express. Remember to check out the next episode of New Horror Express when it comes out in 2 weeks' time, when this Scottish horror podcast gets its very first Scottish guest and director, Grant McPhee. You can also check out all previous episodes of New Horror Express on iTunes and Stitcher, where you can rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. You can also give us a like on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. But that's all for this episode. See you next time.